Jefferson Rodriguez was an 8-year-old boy who died of a head injury on a dairy farm in Dane County, a half hour north of Madison, Wisconsin. The official account said his father, a worker on the farm, put a heavy piece of machinery in reverse and didn't see his son. But workers there say that version of events is not what happened on that summer night back in 2019. His death adds to the more than 100 kids who are killed every year on farms in the US. Melissa Sanchez co-reported this piece for ProPublica with Mariam Jamil, and Melissa joins us now. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
And we do want to warn our listeners that this conversation will involve talking about the gruesome death of a small child, so please take care while listening. So, Melissa, Jefferson, the 8-year-old boy who was killed, was a really sweet kid by all accounts. You collected some videos that he made of himself throughout your reporting, and I wanted to start by playing one. Let's just listen. There he is singing and speaking about his Christian faith. He'd be 12 today if he was alive. Tell us about Jefferson. What was this little boy like?
It's so lovely to hear that clip. I never got to meet him, but from what I've heard from his family, from his parents and the people who knew him, he was a really curious, chatty, active kid who had a very profound faith in God that surprised even his parents. He loved his parents. He had a little brother who he, before they moved from Nicaragua, he would play with him a lot with little toy cars in the house. He would run around. He was a second grader, a really smart, talkative kid who people said was kind of wise beyond his years.
You know, when he came here, he wasn't able to go straight to school. In fact, his father hadn't enrolled him yet. His father was a migrant worker on this farm. Just briefly tell us the circumstances in which this father and son left Nicaragua to come to Wisconsin.
Yeah, they left Nicaragua at the end of February of 2019. The economy in that country was just getting worse. And Nicaragua is not a country that in recent years has sent a lot of people like other countries in Central America, like Guatemala or El Salvador. But things have changed a lot. And so his father, who's worked his entire life on farms, decided to migrate north to the U.S. And he brought his son, because at that time, it was really widely understood in Central America that if an adult migrated into the U.S. with a child seeking asylum, it was more likely that they, if they got in, that they would be released quickly by immigration authorities. And that's exactly what happened. They came up, they got in seeking asylum, and they went straight to Wisconsin, where his father had friends from back home who had already come to work on dairy farms. And so so he got a job within a month or so of arriving on a small farm a little bit north of Madison, milking cows with a couple of other workers.
And dairy farming can be really dangerous. You've got heavy machinery, cows, occasional unsanitary conditions. It's generally not a place for a small kid. Tell us about the D&K farm where Jefferson and his father, Jose Rodriguez, landed and why Jefferson was even there.
Yeah, those are questions that we're still trying to piece together. But so D&K is, by Wisconsin standards, a smaller farm. At the time, it was one of about 8,000 farms in the state. No other state has more dairy farms than Wisconsin. And a lot of dairy farms in Wisconsin, they rely almost entirely on undocumented workers. I said Jose, his father, had come in seeking asylum, so he came in. He had like a legal status, but he didn't have work permission. He didn't have a work permit. And so he was like an unauthorized worker, you could say. But that was the case for all the workers there and a lot of workers across the state. And what happens in Wisconsin on dairy farms is that the farm owners often offer free housing to their workers. And they do this for a number of reasons. Like there's like a lack of affordable housing is one. Also, farms are 24-hour-a-day operations, and it's very convenient to have workers on site. Jefferson and his father ended up moving into this farm, but the housing isn't always in a house. And in this case, they moved into a little apartment above the milking parlor inside of a barn. So they kind of lived above the place where cows are brought in day and night to be milked.
I want you to review for us what happened the night that Jefferson was killed and really focus on what law enforcement did that night when they showed up to investigate this death.
So it was a summer night. Even if there had been school in session, Jefferson wouldn't have been there. But he had gotten used to following these erratic schedules of the adults around him. And so he would kind of wander from this apartment, like directly above the milking parlor, like a place where there's big, heavy machinery. And he would, you know, say hi to his dad and then walk around and talk to other workers. And so this one night in July of 2019, like any other night, he comes down and he says hi to his father, and then he walks outside. And a new worker had started that very day. And that worker's job was to clean the corrals using this machine called a skid steer. That's like a small tractor. And at some point that night, the worker didn't see the boy and put the machine in reverse and wound up killing him. And when law enforcement is called, what had happened is the worker ran, told the father what happened, and then the father went out to retrieve his son. Another worker went to go tell the bosses, but none of the workers spoke English, and the bosses didn't speak Spanish. And so when the farm owner calls 911 to report that this child is injured, he doesn't actually know what happened. And when law enforcement arrives, it's kind of up to them to figure it out. And there winds up, of all the deputies that arrive on the scene, there's only one who shows up who speaks any Spanish. And we learned through interviewing her that the Spanish that she used to try to ask the father what happened wasn't what she actually thought that she was saying. And the way that she asked her question didn't make any sense. And she thought that she understood from this interaction with the boy's father that he had killed his child. And that's not what he was trying to say. So this is how the authorities wind up mistakenly believing that the boy's father had accidentally killed him.
And then they don't actually pursue interviews with anybody else, including the man who actually did it, who was right there. You were able all these years later to find that man. What did he tell you about that night?
Yeah, and I want to say that this man who we referred to in the story just by his last name, Blandón, he was never trying to hide what he did. He stuck around, he waited, but like he didn't speak English. And he, like the boy's father, thought maybe this is how investigations are done in the U.S. They kind of came with this idea that in America, law enforcement must know how to do it right. And so the whole time, these hours are passing on the farm and there's all these law enforcement around. And both him and the father think that law enforcement knows what happened and that they're just waiting for something to happen before they interview this man, but it never happens. And so this other worker sticks around. Nothing happens. He learns the case is closed. It's ruled an accident. Nobody goes to jail. It's not a criminal issue. It's an accident. And then he ends up moving on with his life. He stays in town for a couple of years. And about a year ago, he left because the horrors, the trauma of what happened have really stayed with him. I mean, this is a man who accidentally killed a boy that he had just met. And he's still really affected by the events of that night.
And I think what struck me in reading your reporting was that it was his first day on the job. It was late. He received some quick training in this heavy machinery. My question to you, Melissa, is could this have been prevented?
It's a good question. It's a hard question because there's so much that happened before that man ran the child over. I mean, there's a farm that's allowing workers to have children on site. And the farm owner in a deposition for a related lawsuit has said that he told the boy's father that he couldn't have his son around at night. But I mean, it's a farm owner who had a man with like a boy who's eight, like living above the work site, one of the most dangerous types of work sites in the country. So I think that's an area that matters. The training's really important. I mean, we've talked to other folks who drive skid steers on farms, and they say it's taken them a couple of weeks to understand driving the machines. And then much more broadly, There's very little safety inspections when it comes to small farms in America. And I mean, when this kid died, there was this police investigation that was very flawed. But beyond that, nobody went to the farm afterward to see if workers were properly trained. There was no OSHA investigation. The boy wasn't working, so that's why. But OSHA has never inspected that farm. And OSHA is like a really understaffed, under-resourced agency. But a lot of farms in Wisconsin are like this. So could it have been prevented? I think so, but it would have required a lot of systemic changes. And I mean, like, back to the boy even being there to begin with, there's clearly an issue with like lack of affordable childcare, like in rural areas. Like, if for workers who work overnight, it's really hard to figure out what to do with your kids.
Melissa, what's come of your reporting? Do you think anything will change?
I think for this kind of story, change might be slow, but we're already hearing from a number of elected officials in Dane County who see an avenue for change at the local level in terms of improving language access at the sheriff's department.
Mm. Melissa Sanchez is a reporter with ProPublica and co-reported this story about the death of an 8-year-old on a dairy farm in Dane. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.